Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
Hey, everybody, it's Brian Fritz with the Between the Ropes podcast. Thanks for tuning in, downloading the podcast, listening. There's so many different places that you can get the podcast now, iTunes and Stitcher. Rate the podcast, review the podcast, leave feedback. All of that helps out tremendously. You can also get all the audio at BetweenTheRopes.com, or you can go to the SoundCloud page. Just go to SoundCloud.com/BetweenTheRopes. All the different podcasts are there. In fact, there you can even leave comments if you would like. Throughout the podcast, different parts, what you like, what you don't like. Hopefully you like more than what you don't like. So as this podcast comes out, I'm actually in San Francisco. I'm taping this a few days earlier. I'm on San Francisco doing some work for Super Bowl Radio Row, but I wanted to make sure that I got my fill of the podcast in. So I'm taping this in advance, and it's an interview that I did with Jim Ross, the Hall of Famer, talking about a lot of different things. I always enjoy talking to JR. He is keeping a very busy schedule. He's now the new voice of New Japan Pro Wrestling on Access TV, so we talk about that. Plus, we talk about his one-man shows that are coming up, WrestleMania weekend in Dallas. He's got three of them. He's got two of them on the Saturday before WrestleMania, one in the afternoon, one at night. I believe it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon and then 11 o'clock at night. So if you want to go to the Hall of Fame and you're in Dallas, you can do that. And also, he's got his one-man show with friends, by the way. That will be on Monday night as well, immediately following Raw. And the good thing is that where his shows are at, which is at the Dallas House of Blues, is only like a half mile away from the American Airlines Center, where WWE is going to be having both the Hall of Fame and Raw. So you can easily make the walk back and forth between those two places. But we talk about that. We talk a lot about WWE and the current booking right now. We talk some broadcasting notes as well. There's a lot of different things we talk about, social media and its impact on wrestling right now. But it's always great to talk to JR, such a good dude, such a wealth of knowledge. So let's get right into my conversation with the Hall of Famer, Jim Ross. Joining me today, he is the WWE Hall of Famer, good old JR, who will be returning to the broadcast table with New Japan Pro Wrestling on Access TV. That will be starting on Friday, March the 4th. How's everything going, Jim?
Good, Brian. Thanks for visiting with me. Life is good. Life is busy, but good.
I like that I can now say that you're going to be once again broadcasting wrestling, and I'm happy enough to say that I'm proud to say I have Access TV, so I'll be not only enjoying New Japan Pro Wrestling, but get to hear you on the call, which is it's going to be fantastic, I think.
Well, I hope so. I'm certainly, that's the goal, and you know, it's a great product, and I was a fan of, you know, the Friday Night Access show with Morrow and Josh Barnett. So, you know, I'm familiar with it, and I certainly have been a fan of the New Japan product for years and years. I think they started in the early 70s, and I remember my first road trip to Louisiana from Mid-South. I was living in Tulsa, and I went to the wrestling office in Tulsa, and they said, you're going to take somebody with you to the TV, and I said, okay. And I was, you know, green and 22 years old, and didn't ask any questions. I just knew what time I was supposed to be there, and I knew where we were going, so that's what we did. And ironically, my riding partner on that first trip was Danny Hodge, who was the NWA Junior Heavyweight Champion at the time. And he had just gotten back, I want to say the night before or that day, maybe, but imminently from a Japanese tour. And he had worked for New Japan. So it's just ironic how they've been around for years. And so I've had a great respect for them for a long time. Good brand, good company. So I'm excited about the opportunity.
And I think for yourself, it's a perfect opportunity for you to not only go and do the thing that you love to do so much, but I think it's a perfect style for you with what you bring to the table and what we've seen before, in that you get to call wrestling moves, you get to call stories within the matches, and you get to see a strong wrestling product.
Yeah, I think their style fits my my strengths, my broadcasting strengths. At least that's my mindset going in, and I'm going to maintain that positive mindset throughout the process. But I think it's a good match for me. I think it's a good marriage for me because we will be focusing on the what you're seeing and calling the action. And I think it'll be I think it's going to be a little bit different presentation than fans are getting on a lot of other wrestling shows. Because I think that, you know, the WWE has this their trend, and pardon me, and it seems like the other companies, whether they want to admit it or not, basically follow to some degree the WWE in many facets, including broadcasting. And I just believe that the when your ears are hearing something that you're not seeing, it can create a disconnect. And I don't understand why a lot of wrestling companies continue to do that. They get in so deep in their backstories and their storytelling and all the ancillary things that go with, you know, they like to role play what somebody's got on their mind and all this stuff. I was watching a show the other night, and the first really physicality of the match, the announcers are talking about something completely. They're watching two guys beat the hell out of each other, but it's not being documented, which to me reeks that it's I think it's you're letting the audience in a little bit too much. In other words, we know it's not time to go home. We know that this is not the finish. We know that this is, you know, part of the build-up to the crescendo of the match. So we're just going to ignore it. And I think a lot of broadcast teams do that, and that's certainly not going to be our goal with Josh Barnett and myself. And I'm not going to, you know, Mauro's got his own style, and he does a great job, and I'm really happy he's got a gig with WWE. But, you know, my style and Mauro's style is a little bit different, which is fine. I mean, one's right, one's wrong. Just it's unique, and it should be unique. So I'm excited about the opportunity. I think it'll be a good fit for me, and I'm doing a lot of preparation right now and trying to not only understand how to properly and respectfully pronounce the names of the wrestlers, but also to learn more about their background and things of that nature so that when the time is right, I can get that information in. But I'm not going to get it in for the sake of not calling a skirmish or a flurry or a false finish or a high spot. I'm just not going to do it because that's, to me, that just, it reeks of I'm being disingenuous, and I don't want to really do that.
Well, it's funny you say that about the style, because we can sit here and we can talk about, you know, wrestling being entertainment and being scripted, but at the same time, when it comes to announcing, I think it should be more done, and this is all my own personal preference, but if you did it like boxing or you do it like MMA, where you have all that background information, or even like football, you can have all that background information, and that's great to have that knowledge and be able to use it when the time is right. But the most important thing is what you see in front of you right now. I was even reading a story the other day about Joe Buck getting ready for the NFC Championship game in the NFL. And he says that he does all this preparation, but he only uses like 10% of that backstory stuff because he only wants to use it when the time is right, when it's necessary, and when he can fit it in. And that's the whole thing. He's got to be able to fit it in, because the most important thing is what you're seeing right now. And that's kind of what I would like to see a lot more when it comes to broadcasting. And I think, like you said, people can relate to that a lot more, and you can kind of suck people in a little bit more with that.
I think so. I think it doesn't allow them to drift away psychologically or subconsciously. They don't disconnect and not even know they're disconnected, because they're seeing one thing, they're hearing another. Let's just put the tandem together and add continuity and tell a good story. I think that's kind of where we are. So I don't know. There may be some that are going to say, well, JR's style is too old-fashioned or old school. I don't know. But if you want to get wrapped up in the moment, if you want to get lost in the match, if you want to understand what the strategy is, then I think you might enjoy what you hear and what you see. It's going to be fun. You know, I'm going to try to get, you know, I know that a lot of wrestling fans Brian, are really, they're hell-bent on everybody knowing the exact, the trendy topical name of a hold. So let's say a hold looks like it's a Boston crab, okay?
Yeah.
But somebody uses it, and they have their own little name for it. Well, you know, I might not hang my hat on that name they got for it, because it may not mean a damn thing to me. That's like saying, a right hand's a right hand. A left is a left, whatever. It has a cute little name, that's one thing. But I'm a lot more about the fundamentals and telling the story and drawing you in to the process and to the presentation than being trendy and wanting to only broadcast to the hardcore, ultra-smart wrestling fans that, believe that they know more about the processes and the application of the business than they really do.
You got an opportunity, obviously, to call Wrestle Kingdom 9 a year ago, and that was the first time, I believe, you got the opportunity to do New Japan Wrestling. So how much more comfortable do you feel with the product now? And I think you had a good knowledge of it there, and that was a great event, and I thought you did a good job. But as we all know, familiarity is always going to help, and watching it more and, being able to do this more on a regular basis than that, you're not just doing the one show. You're doing weeks and weeks of television here.
Right, yeah, it's a different ball game. It's a different ball game than preparing for a book card and then going over and calling one event and it being live. When Matt Stryker and I called the Wrestle Kingdom 9 event, we never heard one word from the truck. We were never counted on the air. We were never counted off the air. We were never counted to a video package. We were never counted to anything. We heard nothing from the truck. The truck, the television production, basically acted like we did not exist. So we were left completely on our own, and it was an interesting journey. And we won't have that situation, obviously, when we're doing voiceovers for the show, Josh and I, because, I have clip reels of the matches we're going to do. I have notes. I'm working on my own notes. And again, it's like you said about Joe Buck. I'll probably have a whole hell of a lot more material that I can use that'll never see the light of day because it just wasn't a place for it. And I'm not going to compromise the efforts of the wrestlers and the continuity of the match so I can get my stuff in about how many times this guy's been an IWGP champion. You hear the same stuff every week. If you got Tanahashi on, for example, I understand people don't know who he is a lot, all of them, some do, but you got to be careful in how you deviate from great athleticism and drama and false finishes and things of that nature to say, Tanahashi's a vegan, or Tanahashi eats 8 pounds of sushi a day, or Tanahashi's was a national high school champion. All those things can be interesting in their own way if the time is right. It's all about what you said earlier. It's all about timing. I used to do this in WCW back in the day when we were doing Clash of Champions broadcasts and things that way. I would try to get all my background information and my biographical information oftentimes during the talent's entrance so that my goal was, by and large, I had all my business taken care of at the time the bell rung to start the match. That way we could focus on what the guys are doing because you got to believe that good workers don't intentionally put in wasted motion. Everything they do, in their mind's eye, has meaning. And so if it has meaning to the talent, it should have meaning to the broadcasters because it's part of the storytelling process. So it's really not a complicated job, but you do have to be prepared. You got to be alert, and you got to be sensitive to what's going on. And again, the bottom line for any broadcaster is to get the talent over, tell the story of the match. And you can't do that if you're saying, well, this is trendy. Don't forget, coming up after whatever. Those things are all good, but for the life of me, I can't understand why some broadcasters are hell-bent on getting it in come hell or high water at any cost.
Yeah.
I just think that's not a good thing. And it is a trend today And we're going to buck the trend a little bit in our presentation.
Well, that's good to hear. It's funny how the wrestling business works and the way that when things happen and what happens. And I know that you're going to be working with Access and you're not working directly for New Japan, but the way this has all gone down, it's almost like this great trade. It's, you know, the Bullet Club and Nakamura got traded for Jim Ross.
Well, that would not be a good trade.
Is that the Herschel Walker trade then? Or?
I would say the WWE would be the Dallas Cowboys, and under your auspices in this illustration, then Access would be the Minnesota Vikings in that big trade.
I don't think it got fleeced that much in that trade.
Man.
The NFL and the Cowboys totally fleeced the Vikings in that deal. But
yes, they did. But I don't know. It's funny how it worked out timing-wise. You know, Access started working with my business manager in November, as I recall. And Barry Bloom is my business manager. He's represented a lot of the guys over the years. And first guy he represented was Jesse Ventura back in the day in the WWF days.
I'm sure they love that.
Sense, but Barry's has done a great job for us in my household. But he called me and said, would you be interested in doing? We had not talked. We were reinventing. We were doing other things. So you know, the one-man shows, the podcast, writing a book, all these things, speaking engagements, things of that nature that we're working on. And I really had no desire to get back into regular weekly wrestling broadcasting. Just didn't appeal to me. I had been in the WWE, in all due respect, they are the NFL of the genre. Where do you go from there? How do you go up? There is no up. So, and I had, you know, I'd traveled all these years and thousands of matches, and I'd, you know, done all I needed to do, and, you know, double-digit WrestleManias and Royal Rumbles and all these things. So I had a great career, and I just didn't want to, the travel was a big issue to me. I didn't feel like jumping back on that travel train, so to speak. But this deal with New Japan and Access is, you know, I'll fly to L.A. about 8 to 10 times a year. While we're there, we'll do anywhere from, you know, probably generally a mean average would be 6 shows a trip. So that's doable. You know, going to L.A. 8-10 times a year is not a bad thing. It's a heck of a lot better than being on the road every week. So I'll trade those 51 trips a year I was making for the 8 to 10 trips a year. That's a big deal to me. So the product is good, as you mentioned. I think the product fits my skill set, or at least we hope, well. So, you know, I think it's going to be a fun adventure, and I'm ready to get started. You know, as you mentioned when you introduced me, which I appreciate, my first show on Access is going to air on Friday night, March 4th. And I just hope that we don't let anybody down, and it's going to be everything everybody wants.
I'm sure it's going to be great, and the great thing is, too, is just the matches, the events that you're going to get an opportunity to call, because it has been such a spectacular year for wrestling, especially in New Japan, and now you get to put your voice on that.
Yeah, some of the stuff that I'm going to be calling, from what I understand, has some amazing match of the year type, high level, 4 or 5 star match type things on it, and so that always gets your adrenaline flowing, and I'm still a fan. You know, I'm still a fan. I didn't cease broadcasting pro wrestling because I was bored or I was tired of the product. I will say that was the product always up my wheelhouse? Not really, but you know, that's irrelevant. You got to make the best of whatever the hand you're dealt, and so I wasn't ready to not broadcast. When I left WWE, I was, as I say, relieved of my post. You know, I wasn't ready to go say, okay, I'm going to go fishing. I'm done. I'm going to play golf. I just wasn't ready to walk away. So that's where that either retire or reinvent came into play in my lexicon, and I decided by the time I left Stanford and I got to LaGuardia, I was in reinvent mode big time. So because of the unceremonious way I exited from my 40-year career of broadcasting, it wasn't like I wanted, and I'm not blaming anybody. I'm not crying spill milk or wah. It's just a matter that I had to look in the mirror on a lot of that stuff. And, when that SummerSlam symposium ran off the tracks, even though it was very successful, and they've never gotten hits like that since, before or since. I know that 2K was very, very excited about the results that we achieved for them that day. But because people and some administrators, and not Vince, but other people that were there, heard me slur that night, they thought I was inebriated, which is embarrassingly wrong for them. It's scary to think that they're making major decisions in a, you know, billion-dollar company. But nonetheless, so be it. It was a bad taste, you know. It was a bad taste, and it wasn't the way you want to put a bow on your career. So now I've got a little reprieve here. I don't have to worry about being the third man in the booth. I don't have to worry about I can establish my rhythm with Josh Barnett. I can get back into what I used to do and what I did for many, many years and try to recreate that magic of calling a big-time physical, as they say, strong style, a stiff match, a lot of physicality. And that's Bill Watts booking. I love that. So I'm really blessed that we got this opportunity to get back around and do it. And by no means am I saying, oh, I'm mad at this guy or I'm bitter. I'm not bitter. I mean, I've had a great career. It's just that I wasn't ready to quit. I wasn't ready to cease broadcasting. And working with Access is going to give me plenty of opportunities to grow my brand, and it's going to give me plenty of opportunities to do other things with Access TV other than just that Friday Night Wrestling show. So it's really exciting. This is going to be a really fun year, and I'm looking forward to every minute of it. And I want the fans to be able to say, man, I'm really glad JR's doing that, and I really have fun listening to that 1 hour wrestling show on Friday nights, or they taped it or whatever. So it's just a matter of folks finding it, finding Access, and making sure they can get it on their TV system, whatever they're using. I know some cable companies carry it, and I know that, from what I understand, all the satellite people carry it.
Right.
I watch it on DirecTV. I have DirecTV here in Oklahoma, so I watch it on DirecTV. But I also have Cox Cable. Cox Cable does not carry it. I don't know why, but I'm not sure it's some financial rigmarole. But nonetheless, I just look at it as a rebirth and a new beginning and a new opportunity. So I'm not going to reflect back on what was. I want to focus more on what is, and what is me doing the best job I physically and possibly mentally can on March 4.
You mentioned, you know, you've always been a fan of wrestling, and we talk about these guys that are leaving New Japan to come here to WWE. What was your first reaction when you heard the news that, you know, AJ Styles, Luke Gallows, and Karl Anderson and Shinsuke Nakamura were all coming to WWE?
Well, surprised. I was surprised that all of them signed basically at the same time. I was surprised that really another thing at this. I'm wondering why all their contracts came due at the same time. I would never have that. That would never have happened in my run as the head of talent relations at WWE. Why would you allow your contracts all come due at the same time?
It's a dangerous game.
Well, yeah, it's the risk is immense. So, but anyway, that crossed my mind as a former administrator. I think all those guys are all wrestling junkies. Nakamura, AJ, Gallows, Anderson, they're all wrestling junkies. This is their life. They're all at a point in their career in their 30s where, they got to, as they say in Oklahoma, got to fish or cut bait. Make it while you can. Save it. Save your money. You're not getting any younger, and you got a shelf life. So I was surprised that they all came together at basically the same time. When I got back from Tokyo after doing the Wrestle Kingdom show, I had a conversation with separate conversations with Triple H and with Vince, and I mentioned, I don't know if I mentioned, I think I mentioned all four guys, among others, but I certainly had glowing, you know, Vince is not a big tag team guy. So I like Gallows and Anderson. They did a hell of a job, and I'd had Carl Anderson on my podcast. He was a very sharp, glib, really good guest. And then AJ and Nakamura just blew me away at how well they performed in the Tokyo Dome on January 4th, 2015. So I spread that word with the head honchos at WWE when I got back, just out of conversation. But man, those guys are. I said, man, they're two main event guys. They're stars, and they've neither been in WWE. So, but I was surprised that all four came at once. I was surprised the contracts came due, but I wasn't surprised that WWE had an interest. I think they had an interest last year after I got back from Tokyo. To be honest with you, I had a pretty good track record there at WWE. You know. I think, you know, over the years, signing talent, looking at talent, scouting talent, Brian, and I think that still held, it still does hold some credence. And so I just see big money in Nakamura. I see big money in AJ. AJ had a great debut, I thought, at the Royal Rumble. You know, I'm not one of those to believe that some fans have just enough knowledge to be dangerous. In other words, if AJ doesn't win the Rumble, it's a failure.
Right.
Well, it's not a failure. But if that's your opinion, I'm not going to take my time to debate you. You have the right to your opinion. I have the right to mine, right? So, but I'll tell you that from all my experience and my years of being a fan and being and working in the business and various levels and so forth, that you know, you don't have to. It's not even the guy that wins the match that always gets over. You know, so I just thought AJ had a great debut, and I think they realized he could be really, really good. He reminds me a lot in some of the things he does of Shawn Michaels. Very athletic, not the biggest dog in the hunt. Great balance, great agility, and has that really innate feel for the game. So I think AJ is a main event guy as a keeper. I wouldn't, whether he's the WWE champion someday or goes to the Intercontinental or U.S. title remains to be seen. But he's good enough to carry any belt they have and do it very honorably and very believably and very much in a marketable way. Nakamura is, you know, when your creative influences as a pro wrestler are the late Freddie Mercury of Queen and the late Michael Jackson, the King of Pop, you know you got a pretty unique dude on your hands. And that's what Nakamura is. He's a very artistic, creative guy, and his persona and his presentation in the ring is absolutely unforgettable. So I know he's going to debut in Dallas at the NXT show during WrestleMania week, and last year I did my show at WrestleMania in San Jose, and I went to the NXT show.
I was going to say, are you going to be front row for the show in Dallas again?
I don't know. My ticket broker, Paul Levesque is his name, took care of me and my wife, and we went with one of the VPs of Fox Sports, and he said, I'll get you tickets. Okay, we'll go. So we went, and, you know, I got my tickets when we got there, and little did I know that they were going to be on the front row, but I sure didn't complain about that, but it was unique to sit there through a whole event on the front row, and, you know, I did a drive-through meet and greet during the intermission. It was kind of fun, and the chants were kind of unique. It was kind of embarrassing, the JR chants during that show at times. But I'd love to go with the show. I'm still a fan, man, and that product's hot. I'll be honest with you, and I'm not knocking WrestleMania because it's the Mac Daddy. I'm damn near as excited about that NXT show as I am with WrestleMania.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's for different reasons, but it's sure going to be good.
Right, but I mean, when you hear about the matches that are going to be there, and if anybody doesn't want to hear, we'll spoil it right now, but I mean, when you hear that Nakamura is going to making his debut, and, you know, he's going to be facing Sami Zayn, and you're doing Samoa Joe against Finn Balor, and you've got Asuka against Bayley, and Austin Aries is going to be there taking on Baron Corbin. I mean, that card right there, that's a loaded card.
It is. Are they going to televise that on the network?
Yeah, I think that's a live special. I would think they are. I know that last year they didn't because they just didn't treat it like a takeover, but this one is going to be a takeover. It's going to be live.
That's a must-see TV show.
I mean, hey, we'll give them a cheap plug. $9.99, you get WrestleMania and you get TakeOver. That's a pretty good weekend right there.
Yeah, it is. That's a hell of a deal.
That's a hell of a deal. You got
it. But nonetheless, it's going to be those guys, the Nakamuras of the world, pardon me, I think that, you know, even though he signed with WWE, and even though he's, as we said, he's going to debut on the Dallas TakeOver show, I got a bunch of Nakamura matches to call that were, you know, that were in the can. So yeah, I'm gonna be able to say I got to call some of his best matches. His match last year at Wrestle Kingdom was amazing.
Yeah,
so was AJ's, quite frankly. That's why I came back, and I was, you know, childlike in my exuberance that somewhere down the road, you guys, sick of WWE, you guys got to consider these guys. They're too damn good not to. If you are the number one wrestling company in the world, it should be your mantra, your credo, if you will, that we're going to have the best wrestlers in the world on our roster. And if we see somebody in another company that's really, really good, we're going to try to get them.
And
that's simple as that.
Yeah, and that's the thing I think people have to be excited about. And I know some people are going to have their mindset about, you know, WWE no matter what, but I think it's an exciting time from a standpoint that, you know, in the past we've always heard about, you know, they're going to go after the big guys, and there definitely is a role for the big guy. But you look at the people that WWE has gone after the last few years, you're talking about guys that are very good wrestlers. They're extremely great athletes, no matter what size that they are. When you're talking about a Sami Zayn to an AJ Styles to a Samoa Joe to a Kevin Owens to a Finn Balor, and this is something that you necessarily didn't think you would see in the past, but now, and even now, people are like, I can't believe I'm seeing it. And part of it is, you know, the growth of NXT, but I think it's just an expanded mindset of the way that they look at their business and the roster, even when it comes to the main WWE roster.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. I think what's happened is that even though I think the trends have changed, I think there's a one time, maybe in the 80s, even to a lesser degree in the 90s, where size was king. And I think that fans gravitated to that. I mean, you had Andre, and he had Hulk, and he had all these big monsters. But I think that over time, in indies and in other promotions, the Ring of Honors of the world and other places, that guys that were not giants have turned heads. And they've impressed people, and they've developed their own fan base, and the fans took the guys for their work ethic and their abilities, and not how tall they were or how much they weighed. And obviously, you know, you're gonna have a hard time getting some fans to buy into a 140-pound wrestler. You know, that might be challenging for anybody to do.
Rightfully
so. But I can certainly see a bunch of 200-pound guys getting over because they're really, really good.
Yeah.
And I think that's the whole deal. If WWE is the be-all, end-all, and they are in pro wrestling, then their goal should be we will find and identify the very best wrestlers, no matter who they work for or where they are, ethnicity, their heritage, whatever. And we're going to try to sign those guys. So that's what they should do. Get the best and not the biggest. Just get the best. If the best happens to be big, then cool.
Yeah.
If the best is a 200-pounder, go for it.
And I think that the mindset has not only changed when it comes to the people making the decisions behind the scene, but to the fan base as well, because I know some guys that are a few years older than me, but, you know, in the past, they've kind of been like, well, I don't know if I can buy into that guy being the world champion. And now I think they can. And just, you know, when you see guys, no matter what the size is, but as long as they can go out there, they can go. And on top of that, they're charismatic. I mean, you see, you know, the personalities of these guys. I think that fan base has slowly but surely changed as well to some of the guys that maybe are a little bit of older fans. If not, they're probably just not watching anymore. But I think for the people that really love wrestling, that they've changed that mindset and have kind of adapted with the times too.
I agree. And I think that some fans that blow off the smaller guys, and, well, I can't get into that guy because he's only 5'10", or he's 5'11", or whatever. Well, first of all, the naivety comes in my view, that those guys that are saying that have never got their ass whipped by a smaller person.
Yeah.
Or they've never been around amateur wrestlers. Oklahoma's got a great football program, one of the best, like a lot of great schools. And they got some massive football players that are weight room beasts. But guess what? They don't want to deal with the 130 or 40 pound wrestlers whatsoever. There's no upside to that deal. If you're 300 and you get your ass whipped by a 160 pounder, then that's very that's sad.
Yeah, that's emasculating.
Yeah. So that's what I say about smaller guys. The other thing for me personally is that I grew up in the Leroy McGurk territory in Oklahoma as a kid watching TV, and it was the top star was Danny Hodge, who was the NWA Junior Heavyweight Champion, and was, 220 pounds. And maybe he might have been 215. But we all knew that he was a former heavyweight Golden Gloves boxing champion in the United States. We all knew that he had never lost a wrestling match at the University of Oklahoma, won 3 national titles. And then that's when freshmen were not eligible. So with that said, I didn't have a problem with that, the smaller guys. But you got to go where the trends are. But if you look back in history, at the guys, the great ones, Buddy Rogers and Dick the Bruiser and all these other name after name, they weren't even 6 feet tall. So, but we don't know that because it's a different generation and a different, but we know who their names are.
Right.
That's why Lou Thesz always stood out, not only because he was a great, silky smooth, and, he could clamp that double wrist lock on you in a heartbeat. That was his go-to hold when he got stressed by somebody or somebody wanted to be cute. He would give him a double wrist lock, which the MMA people love to call Kimura, same deal, best I know. So, but Lou was 6'3". But he wasn't heavy, 225, 230, 6'3". But 6'3 got him to the front of the line. But there's so many great athletes, man, that have not been 6 feet tall that have made, they were big, big. Ray Stevens is considered one of the greatest, if not the greatest, pure worker in the history of the business. 5'10". Pat Patterson, 5'11". So, I don't know, man. I think if you're a student of the game, you really take all those things into consideration, and it's not that hard to sell if you think about it.
Right.
But the key thing announcers got to do, Brian, is just don't hang your hat on inches and pounds.
Exactly.
Hang your hat on what the performance and how these guys are, how logical they're wrestling, and what they're doing making sense. So it's an interesting time. And look, this New Japan stuff I'm going to do. The Fale guy that's in the Bullet Club, the big guy.
Yeah, Bad Luck Fale. Yep.
Bad Luck Fale is the biggest guy there.
Yeah.
Gallows is going. Gallows is another big guy. He's going to come to WWE. Now I'll have some holdover matches of Gallows. Obviously, he's a great kid, and I'm glad he's got back to WWE. And he's got a chance to make more money and not get on an airplane to go to Japan all the time. That's good. But most of those New Japan guys are not giants. I don't anticipate on bringing it up. I don't see this as being a valid point of contention.
Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, We sit here, we know the size of AJ Styles, and we can sit here and say, you know, he hasn't been introduced to the WWE audience yet before the Royal Rumble. But obviously the word had been out there, and some people will talk about, well, that's just an online buzz or whatever. But you know what? When he came out for that first time, he got a hell of an ovation. And he did even the following night on Raw when he came out to wrestle Jericho. And, I mean,
right.
people know who he is, and they're super excited about this guy. And they can't believe we get AJ Styles, a supreme athlete, you know, one of the best wrestlers in the world, and now we get to see him on the WWE stage.
I think what you got is if you go back to the old days of WWF, the Intercontinental title was always considered the best worker in the company was the Intercontinental Champion. That's kind of the theory.
Yeah.
You know, that's a rough. It may not be totally accurate, but it's pretty close. And so AJ to me fits right into that that mold of Intercontinental Champion in the old school way. I'm not saying he shouldn't be WWE Champion someday, or he won't be, or whatever. I don't have a clue. I don't know. Wouldn't bother me. I wouldn't have any issues with it whatsoever. But the bottom line of it is that he fits where the Steamboats and the Martels and the Savages and the you know, Tito Santana and Ricky Steamboat, all those guys. So many. Pat Patterson, all those people that could really, really work. And that's where AJ is. That's the kind of talent that he is. And I think that he's good enough and skilled enough to have a really compelling wrestling match with anyone of any size. He always, you know, the great thing about the smaller dog in the fight is that they get a little bit of love from the crowd because they're the quote-unquote physical underdog. And AJ will be an underdog in a lot of matches, physically. And that he can play that well if he chooses to. And I'm sure that he's got that act down very good.
And I think right now, when you talk about WWE, we could sit here, we could question booking ideas, but when it comes to the talent that they have, the amount of excitement right now because you're talking about all the different guys that are in NXT, the other guys that are still getting ready to come in with Gallows and Anderson, and we're going to see Nakamura debut here, you know, in a couple of months. And then once they get healthy, you look at all that talent that they've got. I mean, it's, you know, they've been a talented roster already, I think, JR, but right now, I mean, it's super loaded with all the things that they have and the possibilities they have. I know we're always like, we want to see this happen as soon as possible. It can't always happen. You can't always bring everybody up from NXT at the same time. You got to work it in, you know, gradually. But from a talent standpoint, I'm super impressed with what they've done and the possibilities of what can happen going forward.
They have, once they get healthy, get the roster healthy, WWE is going to have an amazingly loaded, deep roster. And I'm excited about those days as well because it should increase the in-ring product immensely with all these guys getting healthy. So
this
but
is like
right
when,
now, it's I, crucial I, that they, it's right now it's crucial, Brian, that they work very diligently to get, while these incumbents are injured and on IR, it's imperative. It's a must that some new faces get over. And if you're halfway in the process of getting someone over, and don't be reluctant to call an audible. Illustration would be, for example, let's say that it's finally decided that, or not, but let's say it's decided that Roman Reigns isn't going to get over right now as a fan favorite. So consequently, you do some booking and some creative that, you know, all of a sudden he's becomes Vince's boy or Hunter's boy or whatever. And people say, well, how are you going to do that? Or already so far. Look, I'm not saying they're going to do it. I'm not, but anything can be done if you have an eraser on your pencil. My point is that the WWE could very easily call it audible in Roman Reigns between now and WrestleMania. They put a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of creative into him. I do believe he's a big-time main event guy when his time comes. I love his work ethic. He's a good kid. He's been, you know, from a guy that was over 300 pounds that completely retooled his body to make it more marketable. I know that person has dedication. They're passionate about becoming big, a star. I like that. He's not. He doesn't back away from the responsibility of being one of the top guys in WWE, which a lot of guys don't want any part of. They'll tell you they want to be the top guy. They'll bitch and moan to their buddies. They'll be anonymous on with the internet wrestling community, how they're getting screwed. But when it comes right down to the nut cutting, a lot of guys don't want to be the top guy because of the pressure. It breaks people, and it's not for everybody. So, but he's the kind of guy. He's a jock. He's got wrestling in his veins. So I'm a big proponent of his. My only issue has been that for whatever reason, and no company can do this today, their fans have too much information, they have too much knowledge, their social media is a big, big factor. All these things contribute to information flow, and it has to affect how you book. It has to change your perception of the audience and what they will accept and what they won't accept. And what the audience will not accept is being force-fed a talent. You know, and I just believe that Reigns is still will be a great heel. I believe that he has the swagger and the attitude to be a tremendous heel. And the hotter you get as a heel, when the time is right, the more over you're going to be as a babyface. That is time-tested. So they might be able to make that change somewhere down the road. I don't know if they may not. You know, I don't know. All I know is that it doesn't take a genius to figure out. If you got a main event at Fastlane where the winner gets the main event at WrestleMania, that's a massive match. You stop and think about it. In a reality sense, how big is this match? And if Reigns is going to be the odd man out between Ambrose and Brock.
Yeah, he's in a no-win situation.
He's in a position where he can't win.
Yeah.
No, I don't mean figuratively win. He could win.
But from the crowd.
No way. And that's the last time that the Big Show crowd is going to see him until WrestleMania. They'll be at Fastlane. So with all that said, you know, he's got an uphill pull on this Fastlane booking because he's not going to come out of there as this, oh, man, we love this guy. Man, I can't wait to see him some more. People are going to be booing him, and they're going to be cheering Brock, and they're going to be cheering Ambrose. So I don't understand that booking, but, again, I don't know all the plans.
Right.
We don't know all the plans.
Like I agree with you that I think he's super talented, but obviously – the crowd does not like him being shoved down their throat, like you said, but I don't know what they're going to do to get the crowd behind them because you're talking about it's already this tough situation at Fastlane. We expect him to win and then to go on to face Triple H at Mania, but we even saw the reaction, you know, at the Royal Rumble about how he got booed there and Triple H got cheered, and now you're talking about 100,000 fans that congregate from around the world. It's some of your smartest fans. And it's also the people that probably dislike Roman the most. It's on your biggest stage when you're trying to make him into your, you know, one of, if not your top babyface star. And he's not going to even get close to that kind of reaction. So, I mean, it's really a rough situation. I don't know what they can do with it.
I don't either. It's perplexing. And, you know, the only thing I look at is maybe try to be optimistic and not get too wrapped up in it. I have Q&A's on my website, jrsbarbq.com, jrsbarbq.com. Oh, I hate that domain name, but nonetheless, it is what it is. But I fans can, you know, go on the site, it's a free site, mobile device friendly, all that good stuff, and they can throw out, give me good questions. And after the Royal Rumble, my whole timeline on the Q&A section of our website was obliterated by people that couldn't understand the booking. And, you know, hell, I didn't know. You know, I don't know how to explain it to them. Other than some were so adamant about it that they were angry and they were, you know, and I said, I do you take all aspects of your life? Do you take this seriously?
Right.
You know, are you that good a son or husband or father or brother or whatever, sister, whatever the case may be? It's like, you know, maybe you're taking this a little too seriously. It is a fictitious TV show.
Right.
It's not fiction. It's not nonfiction. It's not a documentary. This is fiction.
I don't get that mad about making a murderer, and, you know, that was real.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but it's hard to tell somebody, look, my pat answer has been, I'm patient enough and more than willing to let it play out, and then I will make my decision on, what I saw and how the presentation came about. But I'm not going to go crazy on, well, okay, the Royal Rumble, I didn't understand, and Reigns got booed, and you're trying to force it down our throat, and he walked to the back, and, you know, he didn't, you know, he walks to the back, and unfortunately, when he refused medical attention. He didn't want to look weak. He didn't want to disappoint himself by riding on the gurney.
But then he went to the back rather than just jumping back into the match.
Right. Well, I'm, here's the deal, man. The announcer's got to tell you what's going on.
Yeah.
They got to give you information that you can hang your hat on, that you can understand. And that wasn't done. And so, you know, I knew why he was walking to the back. He was John Wayne, that man. John Wayne's got, he's got an arrow in his arm and a gunshot in his leg and, you know, the whole deal, and he's still fighting off the Native Americans. The Comanches are after him, and he's not backing away. So I get that. But that wasn't explained. And Reigns is kind of left out there like a plate full of piss where, you know, now we're all booking ourselves the angle and describing what we're seeing without any help. And that didn't do him any favors. And maybe I'm not blaming the announcers whatsoever, because it could have been very well easy. They were told to lay out.
Right.
So you can't blame Cole and JBL and Byron Saxon for what you heard, because they may not have been responsible for what you heard or what you didn't hear. So, but that Reigns angle, that whole, the execution of that was bungled. And then, of course, the fans, while he walked the back, and, you know, I got to know where he's going. The doctors have insisted he can't return to the ring until the doctors are going to let him come back.
It's easy to cover up. The explanation with the announcers is simple. I'm curious, though, because of you being in the business for so long, do you have another example where you've seen something like this, where somebody's hell-bent to use a guy in a certain way, and it's just not working in the direction they want, but yet they keep trying and trying and trying for, hey, we think we got a top guy and we want to use him as a baby face, and we're trying. It's just not working, but they just stick with it, you know, and say, we're going to make this happen one way or another.
Well, yeah, you know, in the corporate era of wrestling, guys are actually given, more often than not, you stop and think about it, are given more opportunity to get over in their push than back in the territory days. And the reason for that is WWE, for example, in today's world, they have many, many money streams, as you know. And they have a lot of ways to contribute to the coffers with their variety of money streams, whether it be network subscriptions, ticket sales, some pay-per-view business, merchandise, you know, whatever. But back in the day, 95% of the monies made were ticket sales. I remember back in the day with Watts, we had some, I know Buck Rowley had a T-shirt, Watts had a T-shirt, JYD had a T-shirt, and Dick Murdoch had a T-shirt. And the reason I remember that is that my little department store that I owned at that time, we produced those shirts for the company. So that's a side story. But nonetheless, 95% of your money that you were going to earn was going to come through ticket sales. So the bookers and or the owners of the territory they had a shorter leash on their guys, because you couldn't let it go too long and not be drawing until you had to change horses. You had to change angles. And I've been in many, many meetings with Bill Watts where, you know, he would have a guy, he'd bring him in and put a big build up and the vignettes or give him a bunch of wins on TV, and then the guy just not connect. Well, you know, he didn't stand on ceremony. You know, it was he would move to the next guy. So I just think it's a different time than it was then, because now guys get a little bit longer leash, especially in WWE. And I think Roman Reigns is evidence of that. You know, he's not moved the needle, and it's not fair to him by and large, on a large sense. You know, I hear people say, well, he should go, you know, guys have got to go to Vince, and they got to say what they don't like, and they got to add, you know, Rock did that, and Austin did that, and, hey, Hogan did it. All the top guys, Brett, Shawn, Savage, the list goes on and on. But those guys, every one of those guys came through the territory era. All those guys had a great education. Roman Reigns has come through the developmental system. I'm not so sure that everything everybody wants him to go complain about, he's fully versed in pleading his case. I'm not saying he's dumb. It takes experience. It takes feel. It takes being there. How do you say this angle won't get me over if you've never been in an angle that got you over?
Well, look at his career. I mean, how long has he been in the business? I don't even think it's been 5 years.
Right. And he's been in one environment.
Right.
He's been inside that one cocoon. So for him to go critique an angle that is supposedly going to get him over, how does he do that if he's never been in an angle that he was over in? He has no experience to draw on.
Right.
So that's kind of how I look at that deal. But he's... It's a unique time, without question, and I'm almost leery sometimes of going in my Q&A or going on Twitter, and constantly hearing these experts rebook cards and this is not going to work, and you don't even know who they are. They may be 14 years old.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, and I'm knocking 14-year-olds around the world, but come on.
You don't have experience yet. Come on. I know I didn't when I was 14. But I don't even know how much I do now, and I'm in my 40s.
When I was 14 years old, I was watching wrestling, and the only thing I knew about wrestling was it's on TV at this certain time, and the magazines came to my magazine shop. The drugstore, pharmacy, had a magazine stand. And other than that, I didn't know anything about finishes or bookers or territories or heels or baby faces or whatever. Nothing. So it was simpler then,
yeah,
and a whole hell of a lot easier to watch and to process.
I mean, that's
sometimes
true.
I think, hey, I am a big proponent of social media. When I left WWE, I had to figure out a way to create my own network, so to speak, to promote my products. You know, right now our products are our sauces are in Ingles grocery stores. That's Ingles. It's in there. There are 200-plus stores in the southeast, and that's been a big boost for us. But, you know, I don't know. I just think that it's just a tough time, man, to be if people want – I don't understand sometimes.
The audience is closer to –
You want to ask somebody, do you really like wrestling?
Yeah.
Do you really like – or why don't you just not watch it?
Well, the audience is closer to the talent and to the product more than ever before. They feel like they know more about behind the scenes than ever before. And they also feel like because they have that platform of social media that they, you know, what they're seeing is going to be heard, and not only heard, but digested and listened to and paid attention to more than ever before, even if that is the vocal minority.
Without a doubt, and it's a whole lot more complicated now to be in creative. I think that while, albeit your storylines have to be have some layers and have to have some reality elements included, they have to be based in logic, by and large. I just think that people just, the little information that they have, they know, makes it sometimes very challenging for everybody involved. In other words, I I read so much feedback, and you probably do the same thing. You wonder, do people really still like wrestling? Well, yeah, they do, because they like it so much that they become a little bit obsessed with it.
People,
and then they get enough information that they become informally an expert. And it's hard. I can only imagine there's no time in the history of this business that this situation has existed. Never. Instagram, Twitter, all these things. All this stuff is amazing.
People love to hate. It's funny because even when I was doing the show on the radio every week, it's funny because we would get a regular stream of phone calls, and you know this because you did a show too. I get a regular stream of phone calls, and this is like during Attitude Era and during the Monday Night Wars. But we got flooded with calls once WCW started going down the drain, because it was people just wanting to call up and vent about the booking going on at WCW. People just love to complain.
Yep, they do. That's a societal thing. They love to do that, and it's
it is what it is.
It is what it is, exactly. And the thing, and look, and wrestling's not the only thing. Think about the NFL second guessing and the coaching this Monday morning, and now we're in the wheelhouse and the home stretch of the Super Bowl, 50th Super Bowl, how many second guesses are you going to get on that deal?
Yeah,
every play, every snap, it's going to be overthought.
You're not going to be watching all 10 hours of the pregame show?
I don't think so.
Me neither.
I there was a time in my life that I did, but it's just they can't hold my attention any longer. It's too much rehashing.
Yeah.
And I will save all my attention and my brain cells for the game and not the pregame show. I'm thinking Carolina's going to win that game, but I told somebody the other day that it would be cool if the Broncos won the 50th Super Bowl, Manning, the oldest quarterback ever to start in a Super Bowl game, wins it, and then he retires.
Right. That would be a great story.
That would at least perhaps lessen the amount of children named Peyton going forward.
I'm going to mention your one-man shows here in just a minute. I wanted to talk to you about one other guy really quick, because I remember last year at WrestleMania doing the one-man shows, and you had Samoa Joe with you up on stage and talking about this guy is going to be huge, you know, when it comes to WWE. He couldn't say it yet, but we all knew he was going to NXT.
Yep.
Now, you know, after being in NXT for this long, I've always kind of been of the belief or kind of thought this way, like, I'd love to see him on the main roster. I know how talented Joe is and seeing plenty of him for over the years. But I always thought that he was brought in just to be with NXT, help build that brand, and always know that this guy's going to be here. Now there's some chatter that he is possibly going to be brought up on the main roster and maybe right after WrestleMania. We'll have to see what happens. But I'm curious your thoughts about him finally getting that opportunity, if he gets it, and how WWE will use him. I think he's going to be, I don't know if he's going to be world champion, but it's not going to be one of these situations where I think people have to say, oh, well, they're just going to totally misuse Joe. I think it's going to be like AJ and guys, where I think they're going to be used really strongly.
Well, you know, one about pet peeves is that, you know, I remember sending out when I heard about Nakamura going to be debuting in Dallas on the big NXT show, I was going to tweet out. Then I got a bunch of tweets back saying, well, they're just going to screw him up.
Or why
WWE doesn't know how to use him?
Or why is he in NXT? Well, you know, why isn't he on the main roster? He's better than everybody on the main roster already.
Oh yeah, so it's all of a sudden it's already an epic fail, and he hadn't even gotten to States yet. He's still in Japan. He's a hell of a long way from WWE. He's not even here yet. So that's like, are you kidding me? Really? You have no faith at all. So why are you going to watch? Why are you writing about it? Why are you returning this tweet? What difference does it make? So you already got your mind made up, so it's a foregone conclusion. So why are you wasting your time? But that's one of those deals. I Samoa Joe, why Joe is not on the main roster now is a head-scratcher. But if they didn't have a great idea for him to let him be introduced with a lot of impact and significance, then I get it. I would rather him stay in NXT until the right entry presentation is created. And so maybe they got the idea that they want now in mind for him to bring him in. But there's no logical reason other than creative that Samoa Joe should not be on the main roster and be on the main roster as a main event level talent, period. I'm as stubborn as some of the fans that send me information. I just refuse to believe that there's something missing in his game that would prevent him from being a star on the main roster. There's no damn way. So I don't know how they're going to use him. I think, you know, he'll be new and fresh. He's probably going to be perceived as a baby face until he gives you a reason to not be. But because he'd be new, and he's got a reputation, and his reputation precedes him. But he's a hell of a hand. I said that last year, as you mentioned, at our show in San Jose at WrestleMania. I just think he's a stud, man, and he's a good citizen. He can work. He can help the younger guys. He's willing to help people. He's a total pro. He's a tough guy. For somebody, well, he's not. I don't think he could work with Brock. Are you crazy? Why the hell not? I can book that match. I can sit in a room with Heyman and Lesnar and Joe and come up with an amazing program and some amazing finishes.
I agree.
And so can WWE. It's not me, Al Franken. It's just the way it is. I mean, it can be done. So I'm with you. I think Joe is a keeper, big star in the waiting. Deserves it. He's been a real good for the business of wrestling. So I just think it makes all the sense in the world. I think all the sense. And hopefully it will happen.
Yeah.
But you think about this roster, man. As you mentioned earlier, Brian, when they get all these guys healthy and some of these new guys start getting acclimated, get their feet on the ground, this is a very unique roster to draw from. And the only thing that I see in the chink in the armor with WWE's creative is that I'm not sure that they have enough people with strong wrestling pedigrees involved in that writer's room to get them where they want to go.
Yeah.
I just think that, you know, maybe a little bit more influence from the practical application standpoint is not a bad thing. So, and if that was there, then you'd have wrestling people say, well, we want to bring Joe up, because they would know. They would know what's going on. So I just he's a keeper, man. He's a big-time player, and I hope that he gets his chance. He deserves an opportunity.
Let's plug some stuff. You've got your one-man shows, Ringside with Jim Ross and Friends, coming up WrestleMania weekend. You'll be at the Dallas House of Blues Saturday, April the 2nd. Two shows, one at 4 in the afternoon, another at 11. And so that way, if you want to go to the Hall of Fame, you won't miss it. Plus, Monday night, April 4th at 11, right after Raw, you're going to be doing another show there. And by the way, so both Raw and the Hall of Fame are going to be at the American Airlines Center, which is only a half mile away from where the House of Blues is. So you can easily walk in back and forth between those events. So you got a busy 3 days or busy three shows there. You got two on one day, and you got one right after Raw, which is unique. It's something that you haven't done before, I don't think.
I haven't, and it's a little bit bold, but I'll have a different guest for every show. We'll have Q&As. We'll tell stories. We'll take the questions from the fans and anything they want to ask. It's a no-host bar type deal. It should be fun. A lot of great beverages, food at the House of Blues. Big room. I think for our show, it seats about 1,000. We're well on our way of selling out all three shows. We are not sold out, so don't get confused. We have not sold out, but it is trending to be three sellouts by the time the show starts. And tickets are at Ticketmaster.com, and we've allotted a certain amount. I'm not sure exactly the number, but a certain amount of $20 seats. And once they're gone, they're gone. But there are still some $20 tickets available for those that want to come join us. And I think I looked at Google Maps, I think from the House of Blues to the American Airlines Center, walking is 8 minutes.
Yeah, it's just down Victory Way, I think it is, and then you take one turn and it's right there. So it's it's a super easy.
It's a great
one.
Location.
Yeah,
it's surrounded by everything that you would want to do in Dallas, because people got to understand the majority of the cool stuff going on is going to go on in Dallas.
Yeah,
except for WrestleMania and a couple few other things, but WrestleMania is in Arlington. That's a nice little trip to
that's
Arlington.
That's going to be a pain in the butt to get over there.
Yeah, I would encourage people to find mass transportation buses or bus trips or whatever to navigate. So you don't want to go out there and try to – you don't want to fight traffic in your rental car, and you don't want to try to find a place to park. The best way of doing that whole deal is bus or whatever, something like that. So, but it's going to be a real good deal. So I'm excited about the House of Blues. They've done a lot of big shows, a lot of great acts. It's a really neat performance room. I like the fact that the fans can come there and get the beverages of their choice, and they get good food that's fairly priced, and it's so close to the venue at the where the Hall of Fame and the Monday Night Raw will transpire. So it's good. It's good, and it's going to be a real fun deal. I'm kind of excited about the atmosphere we're going to have at all those shows, especially that show that follows that Monday Night Raw, because if you think about it, after Raw, the WWE will pretty much pick up and move to another city. I think, I don't know, they're going to Houston or
something like that. Yeah.
But anyway, Raw is generally brings the curtain down on the WrestleMania city, and I'm just saying that. Not this year. What's going to bring the curtain down in the WrestleMania city is going to be Ringside with Jim Ross and friends at the House of Blues. And I think with that thought in mind, we're going to have a very raucous crowd, because me and my guests will be able to go over the whole weekend.
Yep.
Talk about WrestleMania, talk about Raw, take their questions. It should be a lot of fresh material to address. It should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that. So Ticketmaster. And look, if you don't get your tickets till you get to Texas, you still give us a shot. You know, go online, and Ticketmaster will have all the information for you. But it should be a fun night.
It's going Three to nights. Be. Well, you're going to get it, especially if you go to the one after Raw. You could get a lot of wild and crazy UK fans there that stick around for the weekend.
I hope so. I'm ready for that. And but you think about it. They've been there for several days.
Yep.
They've gone to all kinds of events.
Yep.
They've seen everything. They've seen everybody. They have a lot of thoughts. They have a lot of memories.
A lot of beverages.
And they're going to go home, the next day.
Yep.
And so why not use that show as kind of a celebratory, it's the ultimate nightcap to have some fun and then go about their journey the next day to get back to their homes.
Everybody can listen to your podcast. Just go to Podcast One, The Ross Report, coming out every week. It's on Tuesday nights. I know you've got James Storm, and then Sean Waltman's coming up as well. And like you said before, everybody can go to the website, jrsbarbq.com, and everybody can follow you on Twitter. It's jrsbbq. So I always appreciate it, Jim, and I'm looking forward to the shows coming up here and hopefully running into WrestleMania week.
I hope we do, Brian. I always appreciate you and enjoy your work. If you need anything from me on my end, it's just how to get a hold of me. So
hopefully
I'll see you in Dallas or one or more of our shows, and it should be fun. And I can't thank everybody enough. The outpouring of support and positive vibes I have gotten from the fan base, the wrestling fans, has been nothing short of extraordinary. Absolutely heartwarming, and it reminds me of why I have always loved the business so much, is because the fans are irreplaceable, and I still have that same passion and that they do, by and large, and I'm very excited, but more importantly, I'm very thankful that I've been welcomed back to the announce desk amazingly, and I can't thank everybody enough for that. So I'll just do my very, very best not to let anybody down, and I want to raise the bar. I believe that I will be a better broadcaster on March 4th than I have been in a long time. and I'll leave it at that.
And that's saying something right there. So that'll be great. So thanks again, Jim.
Brian, thank you, and I will talk to you soon.
Always great to catch up with Jim Ross, one of my favorite people. As somebody that's worked in radio and worked in broadcasting my entire life, I always enjoy talking to other broadcasters, and I, like so many other people, really, really appreciate his work. Plus, this is a guy who's done just about everything in the wrestling business other than wrestle, but he has handled so many different parts of the business, and he's a wealth of knowledge, and he's a great evaluator of talent and the product. So it's always great to get his input, his opinion on what's going on. So always enjoy talking to Jim Ross, and look forward to doing it again here in the near future. Just like I appreciate everybody for listening into the podcast, downloading the podcast. Just a reminder, you can get it on iTunes or on Stitcher. Rate and review the podcast. That helps out tremendously. You can also get it by going to BetweenTheRopes.com. And you can also get all the audio as well over at SoundCloud. Just go to SoundCloud.com/BetweenTheRopes. So a lot more stuff coming up here in the near future. By the way, I am going to WrestleMania again this year. I'll have WrestleMania coverage, which means a plethora of WWE interviews. And we'll see who else I can catch up with between now and then. There's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of possibilities for interviews now, because that is going to be such a packed weekend with all of the different shows that are going to be going on there. So hopefully I can catch up with some guys before then that aren't working for WWE. So we can talk about some of the other events that are going on. And of course, anytime I get an opportunity to speak with some WWE talent, I'll always take that. So be on the lookout for that as well, especially once I'm there in Dallas for WrestleMania. Thanks again, everybody, for listening to the podcast, downloading it. I'll talk to you soon.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Now, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.